about the back or butt controversy.
It is butts.
I heard this story this morning from an English-speaking person. Okay, we really should note the doctor, he is speaking English, sir. Perhaps what you meant to say is someone with what we would typically call an American or neutral accent. He's not speaking a foreign language. She had an infection on the butt from an abscess. Oh, that's another unpleasant word. From an injection to the butt. Signed, such an ass. Ha ha. All right, that's Jason.
That's just gross.
503 abscess. That's an unpleasant thing to have anywhere, under any condition, for any length of time, I would think. 503-733-2970. More of Tim Riley in just a few. Later on, Peter Carlin, also Lisa Goddard. Ladies and gentlemen, let's welcome now to the Rick Emerson Show from New York City. Will you please welcome and give your undivided attention to CNN radio correspondent Steve Kastenbaum. Hello, sir.
Hello. How are you doing?
How you doing, brother man? How's life in the city that never sleeps?
It's doing pretty good. The weather's finally warming up here, so that makes us all happy.
Yeah, but then you guys got those brutally hot summers, right, where it's like 400 degrees and everybody is committing, everybody's just out there like just committing whatever that thing is, harakiri or whatever that. I mean, but it sucks, right? Like New York, I mean, it's a beautiful place, but New York summers are like the worst thing on earth, aren't they?
You know, we really only have a window of about 2 weeks in the spring and 2 weeks in the fall where the weather's actually, you know, pleasant. And then you're right. You've got extreme cold and extreme heat and humidity in between.
Now, this, maybe I'm reading this, first of all, Scotty, before I even get to this, Scotty told me that you had tourist advice or news or an observation to make about a pizza establishment in your fine city.
Yeah, you know, I know we're going to talk about something else, but I had to let you know about this pizzeria on Staten Island, which is one of the five boroughs here in New York, that won recognition as the best pizza in the world at the International Pizza Expo in Las Vegas this weekend. And they're called Goodfellas Pizza, and I went there and sampled it today, and I was very skeptical, as most New Yorkers are. But I got to tell you, it's really good.
Let me ask you this. When you go to a place, another city, you go to a place that's not New York, and you see something that purports... Have you ever been to another city, and let's say a city outside of New York State, that claims to have New York-style food that actually succeeds in doing so?
Never have I ever experienced it. In fact, when I was in Los Angeles, I had never been more disappointed than anywhere else I've been when I went into a place that... You know, said it had New York style pizza.
Right.
And it was terrible.
Yeah, so see, that's the thing is, just as a matter of principle, I try to avoid anything that claims to be New York style because I figure it's not, and it's, at best, it's sort of a cheap counterfeit, and at worst, it's just going to be terrible. So I just skip the middleman altogether and I just get something else. So, this is on Staten Island Goodfellas Pizza because my wife and I we're pizza enthusiasts, and actually, at the risk of sounding like we're compulsive over eaters and freaks.
Are you going to talk about the pizza tour that you went on?
Yes, I am. The last time we went to New York City, we actually, in advance, we spent about 2 weeks. Now, this isn't the reason we went, but, you know, you got to eat, as they say. So while we were in New York, we actually constructed our trip into New York. So the things we wanted to do, places we wanted to go, people we wanted to see, every step of the way, we had picked out a pizza place to go to based upon internet research and reading about it, looking at it. Like, we went to Patsy's, which is in... If I'm getting this right, I think Patsy's, which is in Harlem, which is the place that Sinatra used to go to.
That's right.
And then there's Grimaldi's, which is under the Brooklyn Bridge.
My hometown, Brooklyn.
There you go. And there's Lombardi's, which I believe is the first pizza place, the oldest pizza place in the United States of America that's still operating.
That is correct.
So that's what I'm saying. So we went to all of these places. We didn't just pick them out at random. We found a whole bunch of pizza places that were significant for one reason or another. We sort of constructed our trip and overlaid it on that to get all of that done. So now we go back. We have another place to eat. So thank you. See?
Yeah, I got
to
tell you, I'll make it quick. It's on Highland Boulevard in Staten Island, and they make an incredible pizza with this smoked mozzarella and red peppers and cream in the tomato sauce.
Fantastic. Do they do the thing where they just take, where the cheese is just a little, whatever, like the little balls of cheese, and they just melt it so it's almost sporadically placed around the top?
It is sporadically placed, but it's not shredded or grated. It is really big slices of this mozzarella. Oh. So good.
All right, fantastic, excellent. Hey, there's nothing huge happening, but there was this story that I saw about Busta Rhymes, who's one of those guys that I had just kind of fallen off my radar a little bit. He's in court this morning, appearing before a judge on assault charges And apparently, I mean, here's the thing. I just long to work in the world of either hip-hop or fashion. Because apparently now you can just, anytime you have a dispute with anybody over anything, you can just settle it with a good beating. That's it, man. Doesn't matter. That's apparently now just the accepted, that's the accepted method of problem resolution if you are a catwalk model, or in this case, Busta Rhymes. So this is a dispute over back pay. Let me just tell you this, that I've had many disputes over back pay with people. Sometimes people who were in my employees, sometimes people that I worked for. At no point did I ever think just to settle it by picking up a cordless phone and caving in the side of their skull. So maybe there's something I need to learn about just cutting to the chase and getting to the bottom line in these conflicts. What's the deal? What did he do or allegedly do?
Well, here's the thing. He really messed it up because he was involved in two alleged assault incidents, one with his former driver, as you mentioned, over back pay, and then another guy who supposedly spat on his car, and he allegedly hit the guy. So he had a couple of plea deals on the table, and one of them was really good. This judge was essentially offering him community service, a series of lectures to troubled youth, probation, that sort of thing. But then, as he's driving around in New York City in an extremely expensive European convertible car that does not have any license plate on it, has his personalized license plate on the back, but not a real license plate.
What did his personal license plate say? Tell me it just said Busta.
Something like that. I didn't get to see it. I got there after the fact. But he went through a red light with all of this going on, and his driver's license was suspended at the time.
Good God. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
So the judge today said, well, that's it. I'm taking the plea deal off the table. That's it. You broke the law. You went through the red light. I'm not going to offer you this plea deal now that lets you off pretty much scot-free. So he wanted to go back and try and do another plea deal. He had one on the table earlier that the DA said, we'll let you off with 6 months in jail. The DA said, that's off the table now. The only deal we'll give you will include 1 year in jail. So Busta Rhymes said, forget that, and he's opting to go to trial, which will start in May.
I don't understand, and this is not, I don't want people to think that I'm saying this is isolated to the world of hip-hop, because it's not. Clearly the world of, the rock music is the same, the show business is the same, the Lindsay Lohans of the world, athletes of the world. I don't understand. Maybe I'm either too smart or not smart enough to understand something here. If I ever become massively wealthy, incredibly famous, successful in some way, I tell you, the very first thing I'm going to do, I'd do it now if I could afford it. The very first thing, you just hire somebody to make sure that all of your paperwork is done. Always. Whatever paperwork you need. Driver's license. Don't these people, all these celebrities who get busted. Has people ever heard of like a day planner? Or at least knowing somebody who has a day planner that can tell you when, you don't have any license plates on your car? How can you enjoy being rich and successful if you're constantly having to go to court so you don't end up in some prison where you're going to be beaten senseless by an auto thief?
I don't understand what he was thinking. I mean, especially being in the hip-hop world, the cops are watching you closely.
Oh, absolutely.
Why you would drive around in New York City, where there's a cop on every other corner, with a car like that, knowing your driver's license is suspended.
Especially, that's exactly what I'm saying. You don't have a driver's license. You have license plates. I would never drive a car again if I became famous, because that's how all of these guys get popped, all of them.
Yeah.
So there you go. It's like, you talk to those guys in the FBI, and they'll always tell you that it's not about them being smart. That's the way that they always catch all of you, some guy who's, killed 55 co-eds or whatever, and put him in a crawl space. They always catch some guy like that because he has no brake light. And they pull him over and, hey, what's this? Well, it's a bloody chainsaw. You know what I mean?
That's how they caught the Son of Sam. He had a traffic ticket. Remember that?
Seriously. So someday, if I become famous and or a serial killer, I'm going to have a personal assistant. It helps me keep my I's dotted and my T's crossed.
Good idea. Sounds like a sound
excellent
thing to do.
All right, my friend. So thank you for the pizza advice, too. You ever come to Portland, we'll tell you what strip clubs to go to.
Awesome. My fiance was just there last week, and she heard me when you had me on the show.
Bam. Really?
Yeah.
Well, you don't have to share the strip club advice with her, I suppose. All right. Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. Steve Kastenbaum, ladies and gentlemen, in New York City.
That was pretty funny. All right. 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, he is your president, your prophet, your seer.
the dogs. Police have surrounded an escaped convict. He's going on a Woodburn raid now. This guy escaped from the Santee M. Correctional Institution over the weekend. He's 53-year-old Arturo Salinas. A SWAT team called to the scene to Highway 99 where he's thought to be barricaded. No reports of anyone hurt yet.
He escaped from where?
A prison.
What one?
Santee M. Correctional Institution.
Santee M. It's a twister. Okay, sorry. That's all I had.
Well, all right.
I had no actual observations, except to say that spending the last few moments of your free life in Woodburn seems like a terrible way to go out. Because this will either end up with him going to prison for the rest of his life or being killed right there by, being killed right in the shadow of the Smucker's factory. What a waste.
Good God. All right. Well, hundreds of Iraq anti-war protesters gathered in Oakland today for a town hall-style meeting led by Congresswoman Barbara Lee. And also showing up was Sean Penn, who made some crazy comments about the president.
Mr. President, Mr. Cheney, Ms. Rice,
they're not there.
Indeed, America has a rich history of greatness. Indeed, America is still today a devastating military superpower. And because in the absence of a competent or brave Congress or a mobilized citizenry, that level of power lies in your hands. It is you who have misused it to become our country's and our Constitution's most devastating enemy. Yeah. 2001. But now we are encouraged to self-censor any words that might be perceived as inflammatory, if our belief is that this war should stop today. We cower as you point your fingers, telling us to support our troops. Well, you and the smarmy pundits in your pocket, those who bathe in the moisture of your soiled and blood-soaked underwear, can take that noise and shove it.
There we go.
Thank you. That's the money line right there.
See, he had
me. Oh, my Lord.
I mean, he had me. He didn't really have me at the end. He had me until he started saying that I was cowering in front of George W. Bush. Many people may do many things when they think of George W. Bush. I don't really know of anybody who
thinks of his undergarments.
Yeah, I don't really know anybody not wearing a hood with, you know, like car jumper cables on his genitals who doesn't, you know, who cowers in front of George Bush. If you're in Guantanamo, perhaps. But he starts to get off the path there, and then as soon as he said, doesn't he say moist?
Yeah.
Do you have just the end?
Well, let me see what I can do here.
Just the end when he starts talking
about today. We cower as you point your fingers, telling us to support our troops.
Whatever.
Well, you and the smarmy pundits in your pocket, those who bathe in the moisture of your soiled and blood-soaked underwear, can take that noise and shove it.
Why would he? Why? First of all, someone sounds drunk. Secondly, why would his underwear be soiled?
With blood, I know.
No, but what is the actual verbiage? What does he say? In the moisture of your stained and
You and the smarmy pundits in your pockets, those who bathe in the moisture of your soiled and blood-soaked underwear, can take that noise and shove it.
I don't even really know what that means, so I'm not sure whether I agree or not. I'm unclear about. I need the Dr. Perpa guy to come and explain it to me, I guess. All right, so there you go. All right, so there you go, Sean Penn, ladies and gentlemen.
That was entertaining, to say the least.
Okay.
Well, let's get back to business here. We have some other stories going on, including Oregon's own Democrat Peter DeFazio criticizing the Bush administration's handling of Iraq and says it's time to bring the troops home.
These people have done an extraordinary disservice to our troops, our country, our national security, and the fight against true terrorism that attacked us on 9/11.
Tony Snow has a day off today, therefore he sends out his spokeswoman, Dana Perino.
Democrats have had a chance to make their political statement. They've made it, and now it's time to stop that charade and move on, and let's get to the business of making sure that the troops have what they need.
Oh, she sounds like a real next Tuesday. She sounds like a real unlikable whore.
Mm-hmm.
She sounds like. All right. Let's see, Rick. You know what you and Steve in New York were saying about eating New York style pizza in other places? Oh, this is from some guy from Britain, Mark the Brit.
Oh,
he says I have lived in the United States for 4 years now, and I can, let's see, and I've still to find. He's throwing me off with all this correct British grammar. I have lived in the USA for 4 years now, and have still to find. That doesn't sound correct. Have still to find.
Have still to find.
Is that right? Really?
Yeah.
I'm just a...
I mean, it's awkward, but it's accurate.
I'm being thrown off by all of his accuracy. And I have still to find excellent fish and chips. Yeah, that's not going to happen. Well, I wonder if he went to a Skipper's when he got here. Is it really that difficult to batter a fillet of fish correctly? And what's with all the small pieces? My wife and I went to that Hawthorne fish and chips place last week. What is that?
Oh, yeah. Everyone raves about that place. And I've eaten there twice and I haven't enjoyed
it. Where is the Hawthorne fish and chips place?
It's on like 45th, 44th maybe.
Oh, I know where that place is. Yeah, I've never
gone
there.
Yeah, right next to the chiropractic.
And I chose the halibut for $14 and I swear to God, it's the worst fish I have ever tasted.
I concur, sir. It was not good.
Well, they have further to swim here than they do in Britain.
This place makes a living out of boasting that they are Portland's finest. This is simply his opinion, by the way. Living boasting that they are Portland's finest fish and chips. Americans are always going to England for their holidays, so you'd think that somebody would be able to find out how it's done properly. It makes my blood boil, he says. Anywho, sorry for the rant. LOL. Mark the Brit. Well, there you go. That's the good thing about being an American, by the way. The good thing about being born and bred in this sort of middle living country is that that never happens when you go elsewhere. I don't think you go anywhere else and there's, like, what could they possibly make in America that you would lament the loss of somewhere else? You know what I mean? Because all the ethnic food here is just boiled down to begin with. So it seems, I mean, it's not like I'm knocking what the kind of the food that we buy here in America that they serve, and it's fine with me, it doesn't matter. I'm just saying it seems like anywhere you go, it's like a step up. No matter what, you could pick a country at random on the map, and it's just going to be a step up food-wise. All right, should do one more, and then we'll take a break. We'll come back. We have Lisa Goddard around the corner.
Well, I'm sure we'll think about the Pussycat Dolls today, aren't we?
More than anything.
Another aspiring singer or dancer has been cut from that program. 21-year-old Jaime, or is that Jamie? We're not sure.
I don't think you're supposed to say Jaime. I think Jaime means something else.
No, you're thinking of Jaime.
I believe that...
You think of Jaime, where Anna Nicole Smith was stabbed.
She had an abscess in her Jaime.
Right.
No,
not her Jaime.
No, I... Okay.
What does it mean?
I believe that is a homonym for a slur that we probably don't want to be throwing around.
Well, not necessarily. If you're in Germany, it means something else.
Isn't it Jaime?
That would be in France, wouldn't it?
No, why would it be in France?
What is the pronunciation of that word just sounded very French.
What is the word you're looking at? Please dispel the word you're looking at.
J-A-I-M-E.
I believe it is Jaime.
No.
It's flatly disregarded. I suggested it's immediately discarded as an impossibility. Why don't be a fool, Emerson?
Well, let's play the soundbite from this. Let's play the soundbite from this individual.
Regardless of what their name might be.
I wasn't expected to go as far as I did. I'm more of a solo artist. I've never done anything with a band, so.
She's a solo artist.
I was surprised you made it that far, so I was okay with that.
So she must be a Jamie.
This show is awesome, too. It's on after America's Next Top Model.
And what's on the, whatever, the CW?
Yeah.
Boy, the CW, boy, could that, here we go. This. Okay, which definition would you like to hear for this word first, Jim? There's two of them.
All right.
There's definition number one and definition number two. Which one do you want to hear first?
Number one. Straight to number one.
That word, now this, again, it is not spelled the same way, mm-hmm. but phonetically speaking, that is used as a derogatory slur for Jew. It comes from the name Hyman, from the Hebrew name Chaim, meaning life. So,
I apologize if anybody took it that way.
Yeah, I've never heard
my Jewish friends.
I have had Jews in my home, sir. Not many, but sporadically over the years.
And the second one would be what?
I would imagine. Oh, the second definition for Jaime? The name of a robot in Get Smart. That's, of course, the definition we were using.
So I guess it was okay back then.
This robot from Get Smart was competing in, on Who Wants to Be a Pussycat Doll. The robot was eliminated. It had this to say.
So this robotic young lady said being a member of the group is much harder than she thought.
We just were always rehearsing. And it's so tiring, and we're dancing, you know, in heels every day. And,
shut up.
But that's what they do. That's their job. So, you know, if you're not ready for that.
Yeah, somebody digging ditches.
I was going to say, she sounds really motivated. She sounds really hardworking. All right. Is that the end of that story?
Yes, it is.
Okay, then. Rick, pleased to be telling Mr. the Brit that the worst fish and chips I've ever had was in London, ass. Then again, the best fish and chips I've ever had was served from a smarmy Welsh chapel touring Cutty Sark in Greenwich. And
this is such an international program.
Yes, we're very cosmopolitan. This is just going to degenerate into a whole discussion about where to get fish and chips. I don't really care.
Yeah, I have to say, I really was disappointed at the Hawthorne Theater Fish House, or the Hawthorne Fish House thing. Because everyone had been ranting and raving, and I went with a few of my friends, and none of us liked it.
I don't really want to go to a fish house. Here's the thing, those places always smell terrible.
They smell like fish.
That really is it, man. I mean, that's...
It wouldn't be so bad if the fish house didn't smell like fish.
You really go home smelling like an anchovy. I mean, there's just no way around that. You know what? You know for... never mind. I don't want to dwell. It's 503-733-2970. Really? Are people calling about fish and chips? I don't know that we're going to talk about it. We have to break. We're going to get Lisa Goddard around the corner. Lisa Goddard, top five. Peter Carlin, more of Tim Riley. Likas at 3, Dynamike at 7, and we'll play the big soup cut a dozen more times. You stay there. It's the Rick Emerson Show on AM 970, Solid State Radio.
This is my new face. I had a facelift.
Yes.
So did Shannon.
And by the way, you look great.
You look gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like a Todd Swedish boy.
I beg your pardon?
You're like a Todd Swedish boy. You're like 14 years old. It's a gorgeous
look. I didn't know you preferred that.
It never gets old. It gets funnier every time we play it. Hello.
Oh, is that on YouTube yet?
No. No, Sarah, it's not. I'm not quite sure how we do that. 503-733-2970. Rick, I'm confused. Did the news department report that a robotic Jew was kicked out of the Pussycat Dolls? Please be clarifying. My head hurts. By the way, the Rose and Thistle has the best fish and chips in town. I didn't think they had the fish and chips. I always too busy eating that Scottish egg thing, which is like five times a heart attack in one. Let's see. Rick, how about this? We still have to come up with a name for Listener Party 10, which is coming up April 19th, Thursday, April 19th. How about Listener Party 10, Decade of Derangement? Oh, that's like a Motley Crue thing. Also about the Furniture Maker. Furniture Maker, EcoPDX. Does he add cushions to his creations? You know, to soften his stools. That's a contemptuous laugh. That's contemptuous, Sarah.
That is not contemptuous, champ.
Okay, sport. It's 503-733-2970. Ladies and gentlemen, back up. It's Tim Riley.
And now, from the Ministry of Truth, this is Tim Riley.
This comes to us from Toronto. They went into a 15th floor apartment and discovered hundreds of pigeons and cannibal mice being raised by a man who has been detained. These were free-flying birds, hundreds of them, and they were found trapped inside a small apartment.
And cannibal mice?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And this was littered with books and an extensive collection of pornography. They responded to the call after complaints of animal noises and noxious odors. We found, literally, hundreds of pigeons flying loose in this apartment. Rats, mice, and excrement, and pornography. Many have been... They had open cages, so they did have a place to live, but they were flying free. The man in his mid-60s was arrested by the Ontario Mental Health Act and was deemed to be suffering from a mental illness. There were 250 mice in the aquarium without food, and apparently, they were eating each other.
Jesus, that's insane. And oddly terrifying.
So hundreds of birds flying free, inside an apartment than cannibal mice.
Okay.
Ethnography.
Okay. There you go.
What more can you ask?
I really don't know. When I go crazy, I'm going to do something just like that. I'm going to have some bizarre conglomeration of things when they come find me, like in the motel room or the apartment or whatever it is I'm shacked up in, and it's going to be like hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of boxes of unopened Jell-O, and then like hundreds of tanks full of centipedes. And that's going to be it. And that's where they're going to find me. Just in a hotel room filled with centipedes and pudding. Just something that doesn't make any sense at all. People remember you do something like that. Let's get a couple of these. Terrence, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hello.
Hello.
Hi, it's
my... actually my dorm room, actually, in college.
Yes. Yes, it is.
Anyway.
I was trying to do like a Terrence and Phillip kind of a... Never mind. Go ahead. What's up, sir?
Well, I've got the unfortunately going to Salt Lake here this week, and I'm a little unclear about the drinking arrangements in the clubs and whatnot.
I'm sorry, I missed part of it. You're going to Salt Lake City?
Yeah, unfortunately.
Have you got a round trip ticket?
I do.
Okay.
You bet.
So there's
no
risk of you staying.
Not a chance.
Okay,
no.
That's the important thing.
No. And I know I'm going to be bored stiff, so I'm looking for a place where I can. Get drunk stiff, but I'm not, again, I'm clear about the drinking arrangement in Salt Lake.
Well, first of all, let me ask a couple things. How old are you?
I'm 48.
Are you single?
Oh, no, I'm not.
Oh, okay. Well, are you happily married?
Yeah, sure.
Well, okay. Well, that's too bad. Not too bad.
I'm not opposed to going to strip clubs either, but I can't imagine there are strip clubs.
There are strip clubs. It's just they're not normal. The only reason I asked if you were single, I'm very glad that you're happily married and so forth, as you're saying, because Salt, and people don't believe this until they go there. Salt Lake City has the hottest women I have ever seen anywhere in my life. And anybody who has ever spent any time there will tell you that it's true. Salt Lake, women in Salt Lake City are unbelievably gorgeous. So the strippers are really hot, too.
Women.
What's that? That's true. They're all dumb as rocks. Don't get me wrong. They're all dumb as rocks, and they're all. It's as I always say. Salt Lake City is like meeting a really beautiful girl, and then you talk to her and you find out she's a member of the Nazi Party. That's what Salt Lake is like. It's a beautiful city, but then the longer you're there, you realize that it's just creepy and oppressive. We'll handle these things one at a time. First of all, drinking. You can drink and smoke in Salt Lake City, but the deal is. First of all, the beer is only 3.2. The beer is 3.2. It's very hard to buy alcohol because you can't, although it's very similar to Oregon in that way, to Portland, and you have to go to liquor stores for almost everything. You can't buy anything in, like, supermarkets and whatnot. Also, any place that has smoking or drinking, any public establishments, are private clubs. There are no public establishments that offer drinking or smoking. You must be a member of a club to drink or smoke, and the deal is... You'll go up to like a bar. Let you take like a bar here. Let you take like whatever, Sabalas. If that's in Salt Lake City, you go to the door and a guy stops you at the door and he says, "Pardon me, sir, this is a private club." And you say, "What's that about?" And he goes, "Well, there's drinking and smoking, so it's not open to the public. It's a private club for members only." You say, "How do I become a member?" He says, "Someone inside has to sponsor you." He waves some stranger over. The stranger goes, "Yeah, sure, I'll sponsor you." You pay $4 or whatever. You go inside. They give you a little card to carry around in your wallet. That's the crazy thing about Salt Lake City. Any place they serve alcohol or where they allow smoking, you must be a, quote, member to patronize that club, and it costs a few bucks at the door, and they give you a little card to carry around, and you have to be sponsored in by somebody who's already there.
Is there an underground, black market for cards?
Well, it's been a long time since I lived there, but it's pretty simple. It's just kind of a pain the first couple times you do it. Strip clubs, they have strip clubs there, but there's no nudity. It's whatever, underwear and then like pasties. So there's no nudity there.
As long as they're not sweatsuits or anything, you know?
No, it's not true. But you know, it's hot girls, you just can't really see a whole lot.
Well, that's all right, then. As long as I can get a cocktail every now and then. That's all I'm worried about.
So there you go. So enjoy your trip, and by enjoy, I mean tolerate. And
I can't wait to get home already.
Thank you, sir.
Bye.
All right, thank you. That's Terrence. Glad to help. No, it's a crazy place. Steve, you're on the Rick Emerson Show. Hi there.
Hey, I have a couple names for you for your listener party.
Okay.
First, regarding Anna Nicole Smith, just listener party 10, I'm the father.
Listener Party 10, I'm the father. Got it?
Okay, and the last one would be Listener Party 10, your new direction for everything but sex.
Your new direction. Well, all we need to get is that overreaction in there, too. Your new direction for everything but sex.
Yeah, I wanted to say it neutral just so, you know, you could do with it what you will.
God bless you. All right.
God bless you. I regret nothing.
Okay, thank you. All right, here's... You look terrible. What's your deal?
I just sneezed, like,
10 times. We don't have tissues in here.
I got some. Now, there's a paper towel roll right there.
There is?
Of course, these are the paper towels that have got like wood.
Are they the scratchy ones?
They're like, yeah, with wood chips. Like that soft paper you used to write on in first grade that had like big pieces of tree in it.
Yeah, the allergies are awful.
Here's Tim. I got some Claritin I'll give you later. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth.
All right. Well, I'll hold off on what I was doing until Miss Dillon takes care of her personal business and tell you that a woman was caught with three crocodiles trapped across her waist at the Egyptian border. Crossing after guards noticed she looked strangely fat, like an American. The woman's odd shape raised suspicions in the terminal near Gaza, and a body search by a female border guard turned up the animals, which are about 20 inches long, concealed underneath her loose robe. The woman looked strangely fat, even though she was veiled, covered. Even with so many clothes, there was something strange about her. The policewoman screamed and ran out of the room. Then women began screaming and panicking after they heard there were crocodiles around her waist. But when the hysteria died down, everyone was admiring the woman and was able to... Well, because she was able to tie crocodiles around her body. Who wouldn't admire that?
That's a marketable skill. All right.
Let's do a Britney watch.
Here's your Britney watch from Monday in the Rick Emerson Show. Think I did it again.
Britney Spears was admitted to the hospital for a broken tooth yesterday. The singer seemed to be in considerable pain, but she smiled and laughed through it all in front of the cameras as she entered Century City Medical Plaza. She was smiling for the cameras, but the moment she got into the elevators, she was complaining to her bodyguards that it was unfair that her tooth was broken and couldn't take painkillers.
Now, see, I had what I thought was a photo of Britney with this broken-off tooth. Sarah claims that it's not real.
It's totally not real, but it's hilarious.
And that you're sure it's not real.
I'm 100% positive.
I'm looking at the photo right here. I want so desperately to believe.
I know, we all do.
Let me just hold on. Let me isolate the...
I want to believe.
Well, are you only saying that because the photo... Because the photo has all the other teeth really yellowed?
Really yellowed and dirty, and that's like her missing all of her front teeth.
I guess this is true. I guess this is not her missing one tooth. This is her with, like, no teeth left on top.
Plus, that's her with hair.
That's true. She does have really long, flowing, obviously real hair in this photograph. Okay.
I know you're kind of blinded by excitement.
Game, set, and match. Now, admit it. Now, when you first saw it, admit that you thought it was a fantastic photograph.
Oh, it was the greatest thing ever.
Well, now I'm all sad. Well, seriously, though, what is she doing that she breaks off a tooth? It's not easy to do that. Breaking off a tooth takes a little bit of work.
I would say so, yes.
What would she be doing that she would snap off a tooth? And that's just got to be, I've never done it, but that's got to be the most painful thing on earth.
Let's see here. It doesn't really explain at all.
There's just no reason.
Offers no explanation.
No reason giving for the tooth snapping.
No.
All right.
Which is too bad.
All right.
That's our Britney
watch. Your Britney watch. She's missing a tooth. It really is the definition of a non-story now. She's got an itch.
Before you go, there's something I want you to have.
All right, Rick, listener party 10, top 14-year-old Swedish boy. Swedish boy.
Uh-huh.
All right, here's Tim Riley.
Well, it was 10 years ago today, the bodies of 39 members of the Heaven's Gate cult were found dead inside a California mansion, the deadliest mass suicide on U.S. soil. Is that true? I guess it is. Deputies in San Diego have no idea about the gruesome discovery they would find inside the house in the exclusive Rancho Santa Fe community, where sprawling ranches and private estates are the norm.
He made entry into the residence, and when he reached the living room, first thing he noticed were approximately 10 bodies, all of which were deceased.
You know, it's weird that we don't... It's strange that that hasn't really stayed in the popular culture, popular consciousness long.
Well, it's not as good as the Jim Jones thing, I think.
Well,
it's a poor man's Jim Jones.
Yeah, but I mean, what Marshall Applewhite, who was that dope guy that ran that whole joint, what he lacked in numbers, because how many people died at Jonestown?
Oh, what?
Was it thousands or was it just hundreds?
Thousands.
Just hundreds. I mean, was it
a considerable amount of people.
Was it many thousands?
Well, no, not many thousands.
I just remember seeing those photographs of just what seemed like fields full of people dead at Jonestown. which is really, if you want to go out.
Well, it might not have been that many. They were just bloated.
their numbers seemed inflated, so to speak. Well, whatever. And then he had and think about Jonestown. That's, I'm not advocating this sort of behavior. You understand?
Again.
No, of course, they would be wrong of me. I'm just saying, if you want to go out, you want to make a splash. Maybe it's just because it was a simpler time. Because Jonestown, you know, that phrase, drink the Kool-Aid, has taken on such cultural cachet, has such deep symbolic meaning to us as a society. What the Heaven's Gate people lacked in numbers, though, they really made up for in creativity. People don't really remember how just effed up that whole thing was. They all shaved their heads. Let's see if I can, how many of these I can do from memory. Heaven's Gate. They all shaved their heads. The men were all castrated. They were all wearing Nikes.
Mm-hmm.
They all had purple shrouds on their head. They all had, what, $4 in quarters in one of their pockets? I think that's
really?
It. And I think they had all, it was, and like they had all eaten Jell-O or something before they did it. Like there was some common meal. Applesauce, that's what it was. They had all eaten applesauce. So all shaved heads, all castrated, brand new Nikes, purple shrouds, $4 in quarters in one pocket and one pocket only, and they'd all eaten applesauce. That's goddamn weird. The whole thing is just weird. And I lived in San Diego right after that happened. Not anymore, but there used to be a place called the Museum of Death in San Diego, which was a great place. Just like the coolest stuff if you're me, the coolest, maybe less so if you're Tim, the coolest stuff you have ever seen in your life. They had a whole bunch of like John Wayne Gacy artwork, and they had like, part of Ed Gein's tombstone, and then they had one of the shrouds from the Heaven's Gate thing, which is just really weird. But I remember I had been fired, right around the time that happened, and I was supposed to, and Clyde, of course, still had a job, because Matt Peterson, like, he's the phoenix that always rises from the ashes, so Clyde still had a job. He was doing Ground Zero on this FM rock station. I had been fired, and that was the day that I was going to come on Ground Zero and be like, somebody please hire me, won't you please give me a job? And then the Heaven's Gate thing happened like a day, you know, like the day before that, and so I got bumped, and I never really got to do my thing. But Heaven's Gate was really bizarre, and then, of course, the topper was they did it because they believed that a UFO was following that comet, right?
Yeah, let's see. California State University Professor Janja Lalit says, after 20 years of searching for a sign of a spacecraft, the Hale-Bopp comet was
that was their other leader coming to get them, and they even bought this high-powered telescope so that they could try to see it. They hoped, you know, and believed that this really was the time that they were going to be able to leave.
And yeah, because they thought that there was a UFO following the comet. And they were all computer programmers. That's the thing. They were all, your stupidity is not confined to Des Moines. They were all computer programmers, presumably all very intelligent. And yet that they were all just suckered in by this nonsense gibberish that they were all going to be beamed up Star Trek style.
We have nothing to fear. That we are in good keeping. That we can leave the body that we're in.
That's a Marshall Applewhite.
Yeah. So there you go.
And he spoke on his exit video also.
Welcome to Beyond Human, the last call. We have a big picture to try to portray to you.
But first, we must cut off our testicles.
There's the phrase of the day, ladies and gentlemen. That's right up there with try to help the retarded. You know, the weird, just final thought on him. You know, he looked just like Ben Kingsley. Marshall Applewhite at Heaven's Gate. He looked just like Ben Kingsley. All right. Anybody know how many people died at Jonestown? Tim, if you had to guess?
900.
Sarah?
I have no clue.
We'll do the showcase showdown style. Closest without going over.
All right. 105.
No, that's just a dumb answer. What?
I don't know. I don't know a lot about Jonestown.
Oh, Jonestown's great. I mean, it's bad. It's bad, bad, bad.
Okay, 700.
Terrible, but it's great. No, not Tim was called 913. I thought it was thousands.
I forgot the other 13.
I thought it was like 1,800 people, something like that.
So I feel like, I missed this. There's like a gap in my knowledge about this.
The People's Temple in Guyana, I would say probably, I would just definitely, number-wise, our greatest mass suicide. Really.
A movie about that is usually on every week.
Are there movies about Jonestown?
Yeah.
All right.
Mm-hmm. There's on the History Channel.
There's a joke there. Who's a funny celebrity whose name ends in Jones? Who's a funny celebrity whose name
Star.
Is? Star Jones. Star Jonestown. Never mind. That's already been the Brian Jonestown Massacre. This is an aborted bit. Let's stop it now. Ladies and gentlemen, from The Hill, let's now welcome CNN radio correspondent to the stars, Lisa Goddard. Hello there.
Hello. I'm sorry. I know I'm late.
I will never...
Okay.
No, I'm just kidding. No, I... As they say in Catholicism, you are forgiven already.
Exactly. Well, I guess that's true. It's between me and my God.
That's okay. We were just sitting talking about Jonestown in heaven's
I know. I heard that. I didn't realize it was 900.
I thought it was, like, way more than that. I guess inside, it's just sort of grown in the cultural consciousness. Boy, Jim Jones, he was like, old school crazy, too. I mean, he was, like, fantastically Mosquito Coast crazy. And then the Heaven's Gate people were probably crazier, but they lacked the sheer numbers, I think. We were talking about how the Heaven's Gate thing happened 10 years ago, and people are sort of dimly aware of it, but they don't really remember it the way that they remember Jonestown.
Yeah, that's true. I think Heaven's Gate, they went too far. I think they went too far, and people were probably like,
They were trying too hard.
Yeah, no, you guys are crazy. I'm sorry. I'm out.
Now, I'm getting off the crazy train right now. Am I wrong about this, or at Jonestown, wasn't there some U.S. senator who'd gone down to tell them to, like, knock off the craziness, and they, like, shot him, too? Isn't that the other thing?
Oh, you got me on that one. I don't know.
Normally, when it comes to the mass murder or serial killing of any type, these are things, this is my wheelhouse, as they say. These are the things normally where I excel knowledge-wise, but this, I'm with Sarah. I have some gaps in my knowledge about Jonestown. I think it's time for a trip to the video store. That's a great tiny uncomfortable laugh you just did, by the way.
A little bit.
That's a whole lot of I don't know what we're talking about. Well, let's talk about
this. I don't know what I'm doing today. I'm a mess. I'm all over the place.
No, you don't. Trust me. I am so whacked out of my brain on allergy medication and not enough sleep. I went to bed last night, not to bore you with the tedious details of my nighttime routine. I went to bed last night and I went to around 1. I got up at around 5:30 this morning, and I would say in those 4.5 hours, I got maybe 3 hours of actual sleep. I've had way too much caffeine and a whole lot of allergy medication today. So it's everything is really fuzzy and hilarious to me today.
Well, that's delightful, actually.
It is. Well, let's talk about this. This spending bill. And by this point, everything's kind of over for today, right? But this is this bill that actually gives the first firm, hard pullout date for the troops, which is, August, the end of August 2008?
Oh, geez, if only were that simple. That is, it's almost right. That's the House bill that passed on Friday that says troops out by September. Now, the Senate debate is going on now. The House passed that bill just barely last week, and the Senate debate is underway. In fact, we can hear the Senate floor right now. Oh, there it is. No debate at all. Actually, they've had a little bit of debate, but they're I don't know where they're having their mint juleps or their tea. Anyway, the Senate is talking about a bill that has an earlier withdrawal date, April of next year instead of August. But the Senate bill, notably, really just recommends that date. It would not be mandatory. The House instead ties that money to the funding. It's not clear that the House bill is mandatory, but it certainly has more teeth that might be mandatory. The Senate openly is just a recommendation. It's not binding.
It is so.
Unless it's going to be tough to pass.
It is so like a Democratic Senate, though, that about this issue that I believe the American public is with them. I mean, I don't know what percentage of the American public now feels that the war is going poorly, but I'm guessing it's upwards of 70.
A large percentage.
Yeah, and certainly the majority. It's so like the Democrats that at least in the Senate, they would just sort of suggest, ask, maybe humbly and gently request that the government do something, that they wouldn't just like flat out say, like, this has to happen, or we're going to go in and we're going to start cracking skulls. I mean, that in a nutshell right there is why people, rightly or wrongly, perceive the Democrats to be a somewhat do-nothing party. Because
this touches on a ton of issues. You've got a really good point there. But I think when you say 70% of America is opposed to the war, That entire 70% does not all believe that there should be a timetable for withdrawal. There is an argument that setting that timeline would make things worse, not better. So, you know, I think the country, it might be more 50-50 when you get down to that. And so that makes it easier for Democrats to say, well, It's just an idea.
I suppose. What the Democrats don't realize is what the Republicans learned so long ago, which is that people constantly say, we don't want to divide the country, we don't want to polarize the country, we want to get everybody on the same side. But you know what? Even if it's 98-2, at the end of everything, there's always a vote. You always divide the House at the end, and you hope the larger group of people come to your side. Always.
That's true. It's divided government.
And that's the deal. And you just gotta play it hard, and you gotta play it fast, and you gotta do what you gotta do to have the larger section when you split the House. And the Democrats, that's a lesson they've never bothered to learn. They are the party of won't everybody please like us. They just so badly want to be liked.
Although Harry Reid himself doesn't seem quite like that, but I think you're right. I think the other issue here that Republicans have on their side to some degree is that the Constitution is not clear about these situations. The president, once a war begins, the president is in charge of executing that war. He's in charge, essentially, as the commander-in-chief of the decisions that happen on the field of battle. Now, Congress still has overarching power on money, but the founders didn't set it up so that Congress was running the day-to-day operations of a war. They were funding it. So that's where you get this clash, and that's why this debate is landing in a funding bill, because that's where Congress has its power.
All right. The whole thing just makes my head. Maybe if I weren't so heavily medicated, I'd be able to make more sense of it. But who really can say? Just as a side note, I want to tell you this. This is completely apropos of nothing, as the British say, that I bought at one of our fine clients. I went there and I bought the first season of The West Wing on DVD, which I am now power loading. I've made my way through, I don't know, I think 10 episodes of the first season. I did it in about a day and a half. I'm presuming that you were a West Wing fan when it was on, and if not, if you haven't done this already, I really cannot urge you strongly enough to sit down and start watching that show again from the beginning.
Really?
Most shows, they take a while, a season or so, to find their footing, to find their pace. That show, a few little hiccups notwithstanding, it was just so brilliant out of the gate, and it's so good to go back and watch a show like that and realize how well it holds up, even after whatever, it's been almost a decade now, is just flat-out genius even now. So I would strongly encourage you to plunk down your hard-earned shekels and pick up yourself a copy of The West Wing.
Okay. All right, done.
All right.
My quick reading on the whole Jonestown situation.
Yes.
Is apparently there was a representative, Leo Ryan, who was shot at the airport.
Yeah, I think he went down there to tell them, because I believe one of his constituents had joined the People's Temple in Guyana.
Sounds like, exactly.
And he went down to be like, hey, what's going on down here with all this craziness? And they said, well, hey, let's show you, hold on. And then they just got some guns and shot him at the airport.
They shot him, and so apparently he died, and there's a woman who's now or recently has been, or a few years ago, was a California state senator, Jackie Spire or Spear, I'm not sure. And in this story I'm reading, it says that she was on the runway for 22 hours, bleeding and covered with ants, after she was shot by Joan Tenshman, but she survived, apparently has two bullets still in her body.
Tim is noting that an NBC cameraman was killed, too, in that same... bleeding and covered with ants?
That's what it says, yes.
Boy, that's really a bad...
That's really...
We were talking earlier about, and I realized she lived, we were talking earlier about phrases that you don't want to be mentioned in your obituary. Bleeding and covered in ants. I'm going to try, for the rest of my life, that's above, you know, don't step on a crack and be nice to, you know, be nice to animals. I'm going to add, do not ever become bleeding and covered with ants.
Right. Jesus. That's right. So as you die, however it is, you can think to yourself, well, at least
I'm not bleeding and covered with ants.
Covered with ants.
Good God Almighty! All right. I really don't know where else we could go from here.
I don't either.
It's probably just going to get us into trouble if we keep talking.
Do you guys care about Pat Tillman? We've got that news conference. That's why I'm so discombobulated.
But Pat Tillman, who was of course was an NFL player, right?
Yeah, with the Cardinals, right?
Professional athlete, went over to Afghanistan. Correct me if I get wrong. At some point, where he was then killed by friendly fire.
That's right. But his family was told it was enemy fire, and now for the last hour we've been getting this Pentagon briefing on what happened exactly, and it turns out his convoy took a wrong turn and they were in a cavern, and on one side was the rest of his unit, and they thought each other were the enemy, essentially. No. But there's so many interesting parts to this. One is that apparently a number of generals were misleading in the investigation. It sounds like there was a real push to give Pat Tillman the Silver Star on his death. And now this investigation, this is sad to say, but it looks like they're questioning, in a way, the basis of that silver. They say that Silver Star recommendation was misleading and that there were problems in that report. I can't imagine the military taking the Silver Star away from a man who left the NFL to join the military and go to Afghanistan as a Ranger.
Right.
But they're still saying that there were problems with that report and that there was a push to have him be given the Silver Star.
That whole thing is just so messed up.
Yeah, exactly. It's really, and it really makes you ask, you know, how many families do get the full truth? Here's an NFL star. That's why there was so much publicity. And you just wonder, you know, how many stories really get looked into.
I just sort of automatically discount anything. Like 80% of what the government tells me, I automatically assume is some version of an untruth. That's just, I find that if I just reflexively disbelieve everything I'm told, then I'm rarely disappointed.
Well, you know, it's sad to say, maybe not just government, but I think almost any press release. There is a press release. It is clearly a press release 80% of the time.
Yeah. No, it's true.
And not up and up.
All right. So today we have made a vow that neither of us will die bleeding and covered with ants.
Covered with ants. Exactly.
All right. God bless you, Lisa Goddard. We'll talk to you soon, sister.
Okay. Take care.
There you go. Lisa Goddard on the hill, alive and relatively antless. Now, you're going to... Okay.
We are so far behind.
Okay. Here's the thing, though. We can't break now. We have to give it like another... This is the worst possible place to break. If we break now, Bruce Agler will come in one of the doors, and he will come in, and he will cut my head off. And he will kick it down the street. So I understand what you're saying.
I'm going to give the legal.
What I hear you saying, Sarah, is that we need to break. That's what I'm getting from you.
Get the legal.
Hey, you're listening to KCMD AM Portland.
Okay, see, now we're fine.
Bada bing.
You do your thing.
All right. Gonna find more hot pictures of your friend that I missed out on?
Yeah, seriously, that kind of caught me off guard.
And what's new in your life? And now I'm a lesbian. All right, never mind. It's 503-733-2970. Rick, there was a movie about Jonestown starring, of all people, Powers Booth.
Really?
Powers Booth as Jim Jones. Signed, Kool-Aid. All right, we'll do some more with Tim Riley here in just a second, and then we'll break at some point. Some godforsaken point. Judy, hello.
It's godforsaken. Hi. It's
Hi.
Judy.
Hey.
And yes, yeah, Stole Thunder, Jonestown, Powers Booth. Definitely worth watching. It was actually pretty good.
There's not enough movies starring Powers Booth, in my opinion.
Oh, well, and his ending is actually the last half hour where they show the airport strip.
Uh-huh.
That's really the what you're waiting for.
No.
For the hour and a half.
So disturbing that you even put it this way. Rick, that's where the money shot is, the killing
is
at the airport. Oh, you know what I was going to say? Tell me if you find this interesting. Sometimes there are things, and I wonder, I often share these ideas about documentaries that ought to exist. Like I've talked forever about that hideous woman who wrote Go Ask Alice and then tried to pass it off as that girl's diary. That whole thing just infuriates me. Here's another documentary that needs to exist. You were reminding me of Jonestown. Lisa Goddard was talking about the woman who survived. She's a congressman, bullets in the back. Think about this. You want to be creeped out by something? There are, and they're all about my age right now. They're all about like 34, 35, 36, 37, 38. There are right now, living among us in society, dozens of children who are the offspring of Charles Manson and the Manson family. All adopted, farmed out, given to foster kids, adopted, given new identities, whatever. You could be working. It's true. No one knows who they are. Their identities were all sealed because they were juveniles. You could be working next to someone who's from the Manson family. Whatever happened to Charles Manson? And Charles Manson had kids. That's the weird thing. Charles Manson had kids. The Manson family had dozens of kids. There's a picture of them in that book, Helter Skelter. They're all like 5 years old. You couldn't tell who they are now. But you could be working next to somebody who's a Manson family kid. That's kind of creepy, don't you think?
It is. I'm a loyal caller. I don't know if you recognize. I'm Nurse Judy. I take care of people at home with many problems.
Oh, you take care of the enfeebled.
Yes, and then some.
In the words, you follow the advice of...
you're on my radio every day.
You follow the advice of Tim Riley. You don't forget to help the retarded.
He's my God.
Well, of course.
Just one quick one, and I know everybody's got something for you, but it's really true. If you take just a spoonful of honey, Rick, it slows the synapse reaction in your brain. It'll help you sleep without having to, you know, get the pills they give you the next day. You know, the slow reaction.
I don't trust things that don't come in pills.
Okay. Maybe I have never seen bee honey in pills, but perhaps
I was going to say, when they make a honey pill, I'll take that.
Okay.
All right. Thank you.
You bet.
All right. There you go. That's Judy. She's a little giddy. Here's Tim Riley at the Ministry of Truth. Hello.
I didn't know.
I thought we were supposed to continue.
Bottom of the hour.
I apologize. Today's schedule is all over the place. That is on me. You know, and you know, can I just say this? You know where it all starts? It starts with Clyde. God love him. Clyde on Mondays unravels our whole schedule because the news is supposed to be at the top and the bottom of every hour. Clyde, it all goes askew with that guy.
Well, all right then. Well, it's Warren and Matt had a big surprise when he finally checked his lottery tickets this week. Alan Brown said he often hangs on to tickets for a number of different drawings and only checks them all at once. Well, he discovered that he won $200,000 2 weeks after the fact. Of course, the missus didn't believe him that he won the March 3rd prize, but she believed him when he came home with a check. He says he hopes to do something wise with his money, and he'll continue to play because he does enjoy the game. The claws of Katie Couric have finally come out as she ravages John Edwards on 60 Minutes.
And some say what you're doing is courageous. Others say it's callous. Some say, isn't it wonderful they care for something greater than themselves? And others say it's a case of insatiable ambition. And some have suggested that you're capitalizing on this. Some people watching this would say, I would put my family first always and my job second. And you're doing the exact opposite. You're putting your work first and your family second.
Some people say that Katie Couric is obnoxious and should be quiet.
Away from my children a lot of the time and sort of pursuing this goal is not necessarily what I do. Even those who may be very empathetic to what you all are facing might question your ability to run the country at the same time you're dealing with a major health crisis in your family. Can you understand their concern, though, Senator Edwards, that at a time when we're living in a world that is so complicated and so dangerous that the president cannot be distracted? You said this weekend, I am definitely in the race for the duration. If you want to give the honest answer, how can you say that, Senator Edwards, with such certainty?
Have you no shame?
God forbid.
I mean, with long last, no shame.
To whatever treatment is recommended, if her health deteriorates, will you really say that? Politics, as you know, can be a...
Could her voice be more cloying?
Oh, my God. On and on.
You know that?
I was not aware of that.
Glad I teach you something today.
That's Katie Couric from 60 Minutes last night. And by the way, we should be fair. That's not one long question, obviously.
Right. They edited out the answer.
That's all of the questions she asked.
It's all about Katie.
But last night, seven times, she used a variation of the phrase, some people say, and never identifying who they were. She never said, so-and-so actually says or asks or wonders. She used seven variations on that phrase. Some people say, John Edwards, that you have a giant head and shellacky hair. She never attributed any of these things. But she just went on and on about it with that fake ass, like, I'm so concerned and I'm trying to be really sensitive as I ask these questions with my fake, sincere mother voice. And it's like, I want to be a team player. I want to be a team player. I want to be supportive of CBS. But God damn, it was condescending and cloying. I just wanted to reach to the screen and just smack her. I mean, the whole thing was irritating. I couldn't watch all of it. The whole thing was just so frustrating. So, you know, whatever. So there you go. So there's that. I really was hoping that John Edwards, because you always hear about what a badass trial lawyer he was. And then, like, when he did that debate with Dick Cheney, he just choked. And then last night I was hoping he would just cut her up, and he never did. So, anyway. Rick, we'll read this and then we'll break. Rick, my father-in-law was a U.S. Air Force lieutenant colonel when Jonestown happened. Because these people were... Now, do you know the deal with Jonestown?
No, I don't.
All right, here's the deal. I'll give it to you real quick.
Yeah, I had no idea that... Yeah.
Jim Jones, who was a nutcase and a megalomaniac, lived... It was in San Francisco, wasn't it?
Yes.
San Francisco, started a church, like one of those hippie-trippy, you know, Manson...
What was it called?
...family type church, the People's Temple. And it was a whole lot of, like... you know, it was like all of these things where it was like reject society's rules and free love and whatever, except follow me, for I am your leader, where he wanted everybody to, you know, ignore all authority but him, just like all religions. Anyway, and so the U.S. government eventually took a pretty keen interest in the fact that he was, like, fleecing his followers out of money and was, you know, brainwashing them and so forth. And so he packed up all the crap, and they all moved to Guyana. And so in Guyana, where he was, you know, allegedly free of U.S. law. And so it's him and, you know, and just what over 1,000 followers that are there. And they have this whole compound they live in and this whole Mosquito Coast, Swiss Family Robinson type village that they built. And
they all called him Dad.
Is that true?
Yeah.
I didn't
really?
Know that. He's a creepy looking bastard, too. He's a creepy.
What's his name?
Jim Jones. I've got some great audio from Jim Jones at home on one of my
many collections.
Yeah, right between my Sinatra and my Guns N' Roses.
Oh, he is creepy.
He's a totally creepy guy. Anyway, I didn't know they called him Dad. That's unnerving. But he would give these fire and brimstone services that would go on for hours, where he would talk about the coming apocalypse. And of course, it's just like all the greatest hits that these guys spin. The coming apocalypse, and that, you know, you had to follow him or you were going to perish, and blah 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 blah. And he did all the classic brainwashing things. He underfed people and then made them do a lot of manual labor all day in the sun, so they didn't have any mental resistance. And da da da. So at some point, this congressman. Leo Ryan, I think we said his name was, he had a constituent who had a family member in Guyana. And they're like, hey, you know, my family member's been kidnapped and they're being brainwashed by this idiot. Will you go down to Guyana and check it out? The congressman goes down with a news team and a whatever. They get ambushed on the tarmac, on the landing pad, by some people from the People's Temple of Jonestown. Blah, blah, blah. The military finally goes in to clean house a while later. Jim Jones knows it's coming, and he has all of the people at the temple, almost all of them anyway, they all commit suicide. He prepares this huge vat of poisoned Kool-Aid, cyanide-laced Kool-Aid, in the middle of the temple. And I'm pretty sure there are recordings of this, but maybe I'm making that up. Maybe it's just survivor testimony. But where he gets on a loudspeaker and he's like, everyone is to come to the temple and drink the Kool-Aid. Mothers, if your children are too young to drink the Kool-Aid themselves, you must feed them the Kool-Aid.
Oh, my God.
And it's all poison Kool-Aid. And then people who refused to drink the Kool-Aid were, I think, like machine gunned to death. So basically everybody died one way or the other. And then he killed himself, I think, by shooting himself in the head on the altar. Like, he's at the top of the altar, you know, in his godlike position. And then he started saying something about his mother, and then he shot himself. Anyway, and then so, like, days later, the military finally gets there, and they walk in, and it's like 1,000 corpses just laying in the sun.
Man. So did all of them? It was the entire.
I think almost everybody. I think some people ran into the jungle and hid.
Yeah.
But I know he sent people into the jungle to find them, and if they found you, you were dragged back and either shot or poisoned. Anyway, this guy says, my father-in-law was a U.S. Air Force colonel when Jonestown happened. Because these people were Americans, the Air Force was called to retrieve the bodies. He was in charge of selecting crews to get these people who were baking in the sun for days before their arrival.
Oh.
My father-in-law said there was nothing but a bunch of stink he couldn't wash off flying back from Guyana. It took a long time for those guys to forgive him for sending them on that mission. P.S. Rick Emerson Listener Party 10, bleeding and covered in ants. All right, there you go. So, and there's a whole bunch of photos.
Yeah, I'm looking at them now. And
Jonestown photos of, like,
messed up.
Yeah, like 900 people just dead laying in the sun, and like families, and it's all creepy. The whole thing is creepy. Yeah, yeah, that's a guy who really.
My God,
he really hit
a lot of people.
He hit a home run in the nutcase Olympics. All right. Well, we should take a break here. We'll come back. More of Tim Riley. Oh, we got to read this whole thing. Kind of a morbid show today. We got to read this whole thing about the sleigh grilling. If only because sleigh grilling is a great phrase. It really is. You know it's true. All right. 503-733-2970. Like us at 3, Donna Mike at 7. It's the Rick Emerson Show. Don't go anywhere. Back after this.